What's up, y'all? Welcome to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. This is the opportunity for me to really spotlight you, the listener. So Kelly is a listener of the podcast, and she was interacting with me and Jared at one point about one of the shows we did together. And so it's my privilege to bring you Kelly Salter. So Kelly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my privilege to be here.
All right, Kelly, tell me your athletic training story. So let's start off where you first learned about athletic training, and then how do you get to where you are right now?
Yeah, so I have been in the profession for 21 years. First got interested in athletic training my junior year of high school. I went to a small private high school, switched to a public high school my junior year, and tore my meniscus swimming, and got the privilege of working with our high school athletic trainer. I tell my high school kids jokingly, he was really good looking, which was super helpful, being a 17-year-old girl. But he taught me a bunch about the profession and what he did, and it just sparked my interest. And so I pursued college based on that.
All right. So after high school, where'd you go?
I went to Grand Valley State University. It was a curriculum program, but no degree. So my degree is in biomedical health science, but I had an athletic training emphasis. Graduated from there in 96 and was hired by a hospital to do clinical only when I got out of college. So I worked in a PT clinic seeing outpatient orthopedic patients.
All right. So what is a degree in biomedical science?
It was kind of one of those. So most athletic trainers at that point were either going into teaching. So they were getting like a teaching degree with an athletic training emphasis, or they were doing like physical education or exercise science. I kind of had thoughts when I was younger that maybe I would go on to PA school or medical school. So I kind of got all the prereqs out of the way for that. Didn't end up happening, but that's kind of why I went that route.
Gotcha. Okay. You mentioned that you were first hired on as clinical only.
Mm-hmm.
So that leads me to believe that there is something that has changed.
Yes. Yeah. So I got hired by a hospital, clinical only. Worked in a PT clinic. I worked 4 10-hour shifts, which honestly was not what I was looking for outside of college. I definitely wanted a high school or college placement, but it's what was offered to me and what I took. And it was a great experience. Taught me a lot, filled in a lot of holes that I didn't get in college on the rehab PT side of things. But quickly, one of the athletic trainers they had contracted out got married. I ended up covering for her honeymoon. She then quickly had children. And so I ended up kind of sneaking into the collegiate high school setting through some contracts with the hospital.
You said collegiate high school setting. So doing both?
Yep, doing both. So we had contracts with a couple local universities and a little different where I was contract with the university, but we would cover specific sports. So I did like college volleyball, college hockey, college basketball, different sports that way. And then we had a local high school contract that I covered.
All right. So what was your favorite sport that you were working out of the contract stuff?
Definitely, I would say football. Interestingly enough, kind of an odd story, but when I covered that first high school, when she went off on her honeymoon, I met my husband, who was the football coach there, an assistant coach at the time, became the head coach before we got married. But even in college, I definitely had a love for just the intensity and the contact and the collision and all of that of football. I definitely enjoy that sideline.
All right. So talk a little bit more about the meeting your husband and how that relationship formed and how you kept it professional.
Yeah. So, you know, it's kind of funny. It wasn't difficult to do. We're both very professional. He's a teacher, coach. I'm in athletic training. I think it worked well because we understood each other's roles so well. So he knew going in what my job was, and I obviously knew going in what his job was. We've been married. It'll be 19 years this July. He's still coaching football, and interestingly enough, as crazy as this sounds, after I left Garden City Hospital, which was where I started my employment, I took some time off from athletic training for our children, recertified in 2008. So I had 3 years without my NATA certification, sat for the exam again, which if you are thinking of taking a break from the profession for any reason, do not let your certification lapse. That was a really bad idea on my part. But I just didn't do the research to figure out that I could put it on hold, or I could look for free CEUs, or, you know, an abundance of information I should have gotten and I didn't. So I reached that in 2008 and then got hired directly by a school district in 2011. And so I'm in a community directly by the school district, hired directly by the school district. And my children, who are now in high school, have joined me at that high school. And my husband has now joined me as an assistant football coach out there. So we are one family on one campus, which is really cool. And I'm very, very grateful that worked out. It presents its challenges sometimes, but it's a great experience.
That is very unique. I mean, I could see that if it's like a really small high school with a coach and athletic trainer and the kids going there, but that is super cool.
Yeah.
That's actually, you know, why I have my kid, you know, I live close to where I work. It's like 4 miles.
Right.
And so I will have my kids going to my high school because
yeah.
if there's something going on, I want to be involved, and the easiest way is
yeah.
for me to be here. So
yeah. Yeah, it was funny when I hired on in 2011, my kids weren't in high school yet. And I kind of told the athletic director at that point, I planned on staying for about 4 years because that would get my kids to high school. And I knew I wasn't going to trade. I knew I could figure out something else to do in the profession where I would still be able to see their athletics and sporting events. I didn't want to miss that. And he jokingly said, well, they'll just come to school here. And I said, there's no way, you know, that's not going to happen. And sure enough, they both asked to transfer a couple years in, and now we're all out there. So it's great.
Very cool. All right, let's go back and talk a little bit more about the, I guess, the relinquishing of your ATC title. Because
yeah.
I'm sure you heard that I'm kind of in the process of doing that right now because I screwed up. I take the responsibility. It was my fault.
Right.
But
right.
now I'm trying to get that back. So coach me through it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how far in you are. I literally, you know, I had 2 children. They were 14 months apart. Life was a little crazy here. And I just couldn't keep up. And so I literally just stopped all contact with the NATA. I stopped mailing in, you know, my BOC dues. I stopped doing everything. You know, eventually got a letter from them that said, you know, I was no longer certified. And in my head with 2 small children, I was like, okay, like that's not a big deal. But the bottom line was, you know, fast forward as my kids got a little older, I told my husband, I really only worked full-time in the profession for about 3 years before I had my first son. And then I went contingent and you know, did here and there. But I told him around 2007, I said, I really miss it. Like, I feel like I went to school for something I was passionate about and really loved and didn't do it for very long. And he said, well, then go back. And I said, I don't know if I can sit for that exam again. Like, I literally don't. I mean, I was so far removed from the classroom and the book end of it. And, you know, so it was a commitment on my part to prep. And I'll tell you, you know, again, all my fault that I lost it. The NATA has things in place. It's just a matter of investigating them. And so that's why I kind of encourage you, if you're like on the fence or you're just hurting financially during this, like, you know, reporting period and you can't get the CEUs, there's free ones out there. There is a hold you can put on your, you know, certification, et cetera. Thankfully, I did pass. I mean, literally by the skin of my, you know, chin, I passed that exam the second time around, but I won't let it go again. Lesson learned.
Yeah, I know Mike Hopper was kind of in the conversation with somebody about that, and he's like, he mentioned me, and he's like, I was like, look, it is not fun to go back. And I, you know, I'm close enough to the University of Houston. I can actually go up there and kind of sit in and on some of their classes and talk with their kids yeah. some. And the things on the test, the things that they're thinking through, I'm like, I don't understand how you take this test, how you pass this, because, you know, they're looking for basic information on the test. But as within my, you know, 13th year in the profession,
yeah.
there's a lot of other things I think about, but a lot of less details I think about. And the test is
right,
right now so many details without the big picture or what I've seen so far.
Right.
You know, it, whatever.
It is hard to, so when I took the test in 96, it was a 3-part exam. It was the practical, the written sim, and the written. And I thought, I would say, like, back in 96, I thought it was a decent representation of, you know what I mean? Especially the practical side of things. Now it's literally 150 or however many question computer tests. It's hard to represent what we do and what we know on a multiple choice. You know, it's just hard. It's hard.
Yes,
so.
For sure.
I'm glad I'm done. And good luck to you. I hope you.
Yeah, I definitely have to devote some serious studying time. I've been studying like off and on, and I really need yeah. to focus and then schedule. I guess I need to schedule the test and then focus. That's what people do with like marathons or 5Ks, right? They schedule it and then they train for it.
Yeah, you don't start training until you've actually paid the, you know, deposit on the race. And then
and it's expensive, you know, so I don't want to pay that race and then not be ready.
I know.
So.
I agree.
All right. So mom of two kids, athletic trainer, you said 19 years in the profession?
21.
You've been married for 19 years.
Yes, married for 19. Yep.
Okay. All right. So you've obviously learned a lot. So tell me some of the ways that you've used your athletic training at home.
I think probably one of the strongest things that has afforded me, you know, I joke with my kids all the time because I'll come home and they'll be like, can you look at, you know, my knee or whatever. They're both, you know, one's a 3-sport athlete, one's a 2-sport athlete. They definitely get their fair share. And I'm like, oh no, I'm like totally off the clock right now. Like, you can come see me in the training room like everybody else does. But I think what it's done is I so appreciate the years I've put in that has allowed me to thoroughly enjoy my teenagers. Like the communication skills I've learned from great teachers and great coaches who've been in my, you know, different environments, and I've seen how they communicate and relate to kids, and I've been able to like kind of be involved in that has allowed me, like, I love having teenagers, and I don't think I would have ever said that before. Like my ability to relate with them because I've seen it done by so many, like before me when I had young kids, you know, watching these coaches and teachers, et cetera, relate to teenagers. It's taught me a lot just even at home and keeping open lines of communication. And it's been great. It's been good.
Yeah, it's definitely one thing because I feel like I'm kind of prepared to deal with teenagers once my kids get there, but right now they're not. And so I'm kind of at a loss because, like, is this what a 6-year-old is supposed to act like?
I know.
And so
I'm used to dealing with 16-year-olds, which in some ways they're similar, you know, but yeah.
All right. So what are some of the injuries that have been most memorable to you?
Yeah, I think my most memorable injury was after I started at my current high school, Groves High School. It was my first year out there. I had not worked for a couple years. This was my first high school that was all, I mean, I hate to say mine possessively, but I was the only trainer there. You know what I mean? It was springtime. I had kind of spent the year like getting back in the swing of things. And I had a girl softball player get hit by a line drive right in her jaw. And that was more blood and more teeth and more fractures than I had ever seen kind of in one moment. She ended up having a couple surgeries, obviously is fine now, but, it was a non-life threatening, but very emergent situation. And trying to, realize then like little things like, you know, my emergency cards were in the training room. She's out on the field, you know, in the far corner, and trying to kind of organize and orchestrate all of that, was kind of a good baptism by fire getting back into it. I was like, okay, this is what it means to have an emergency again. I haven't had one of these kind of in a while. So like I said, just more blood than I've ever seen kind of in one injury situation.
The one facial fracture, I remember I was in college. It's my freshman year of college and I'm with a baseball team by myself. Right, so there's no licensed athletic trainer out there. Right. I'm at practice, first baseman coming for a fly ball, third baseman running in for the fly ball, and they collide, and you know, he goes down to the ground, and there wasn't any blood, but there was like some swelling. He ended up having to have like a plate put in his face, but there I am as a freshman, you know, I only know just a little bit. I was a student trainer in for high school for 4 years, but...
Right.
What did you really learn there? So,
yeah, I mean, even in this instance, it was like pack as much gauze as I could in there to get it to, you know what I mean? Slow enough, but there really wasn't much you could do. But I remember thinking, oh my goodness, like this is, you know, there's so many different avenues we can work as athletic trainers. Then when you're away from a specific avenue for a while, you forget what it's like to deal with, you know, different injuries and different emergencies. So.
All right. Is there any sort of a regular saying you have, you know, like some athletic trainers are quoted by their students, you know, just saying, just ice it, or, you know, like I tell kids all the time, yeah, well, let's hop on the foam roller before we do anything.
No, I can't think of a quote that they repeat of me too often. None are coming to mind.
No.
Yeah, I can't think of any.
All right. Tell me some of the life lessons that you've learned being an athletic trainer.
Yeah, I think, you know, now that I've been able to kind of mentor a few, and they both happen to be females into the profession, one heading off to school and one getting her master's currently. I think that athletic training in general, and sometimes for women especially, can kind of have a bad rap. Like, you want to go into this field, you're never going to be able to have kids, you're not going to be able to, you know, work, and how are you going to manage, and you don't make a lot of money, and you know, et cetera, et cetera. And I think I will never regret that I chose the profession that I was most interested in and had the most passion for, like when I was, you know, 17, 18 years old. And I think fast forward 20 years, and I'm 43 now, there is a way to balance work and life, and it takes work and effort. But there's a way to do it, and you can do that, you know, in any profession you're in. I just emailed with a girl who ended up kind of tweeting something, a question about, can I be a mom in this profession, and et cetera. And I was able to email her and answer some questions. But I think my greatest advice is, you know, do what you love and then figure out how to do it well and how to be balanced. And I don't think my husband or my kids would ever say that they feel slighted or sacrificed at the expense of my job, but it's taken work. I mean, it's not been super easy to, you know, figure out, but we have figured it out, and I am more apt and more comfortable in my own skin to be able to say like, hey, I need this time off, or no, I can't cover this. And that's taken some maturity and some, again, just getting comfortable in my own skin to be able to do that, to say my family comes first here. And it's always met with no resistance. Like, I've never had anybody fight me back on that. It's just hard to say. It's hard to say, like, this is more important, so this is what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So
again, it comes back to, like you said, the communicating, setting that expectation. Hey, coach, my number one priority is my family. If there's a conflict between work and my family, and then most of the time family is going to win. You know, obviously emergency we're going to take care of, but just setting that expectation in the beginning rather than just like in the middle of practice leaving because your kid,
right,
you know, has a cold.
Right. You're walking out. And I think that's it too. I think, you know, for me, the most important aspect of at least what I do at the high school is building relationships. And that comes with coaches and administrators and athletes and parents and all the way around. And the only way you do that is with communicating. And so if you're working on that and you're open and you're communicating, like I said, I'm sure there's an occasional boss or coach out there that might give you flack back. But for the most part, I have found them to be, you know, like, hey, yeah, go take care of that. You know, your family's important, kind of a thing. And I think more often than not, it was my own insecurity in saying it more than any resistance I was met with.
You mentioned mentoring a few people. How do you go about mentoring? Is that something you continually seek out, or just you're situational?
It's situational. I'm trying to get, I approached the school district or my school with possibly getting like an independent study class started like fifth hour where I can start working with kids who are interested in the profession. But I'm not a certified teacher, and trying to figure out what that looks like has been a little tricky. But I kind of let the kids seek me out. And when they seek me out and ask me questions, I kind of invite them in to, you know, work with me or shadow me or, you know, whatever in that regard. So I have one at the high school now who's a junior who's been phenomenal. I've enjoyed having her work next to me and watch her kind of investigate the profession and colleges, et cetera. And then another, she's getting her master's currently, but she was in our youth group at church and got interested in the profession. And so I've been able to work with her too. So it's just, I don't know if there's anything more rewarding than someone seeing you work and then have a desire to do what you do. Like, it's just, it's a rewarding thing.
Yeah, for sure. And I was just mentioning, I actually did the other listener spotlight right before this. And when I was talking to Vidal, I mentioned that we last night had a student, she was an athlete here. She went to Texas A&M. She's interested in doing athletic training. She didn't do it here in the high school. And so
Right. She's
been able to do some of the contract work with me. Like, I'll just take her along and let her watch and help out. And through the process, she came out and hung out with us last night, ate dinner with us, we played games. The kids love when she comes over. And
yeah,
just that process, you know, we're going to her graduation. So just being involved in somebody else's life, and like you said, just helping bring them up. And if they choose something different, if she chooses not to do athletic training, you know, so be it. But we're still going to be friends, and I'm still going to be able to encourage her about life, because, you know, obviously she's going to want to get married and have kids and do well in her profession. And I think that's something that I can encourage her with. So,
yeah. And just being able to set that, you know, I think back to when I was that age, and then think of the, you know, like your kids get to see someone older than them, you know what I mean, making good choices and doing things, and they get to kind of model that. And then she gets to see you and your wife and your family and how that all comes together. It's like a great privilege to kind of go back and forth that way.
Yes, you know? Yeah, because there's only so much in the classroom or the athletic training room that, or even on the field that they see. But, you know, if you bring them into your home, they see how you interact, you know, that I'm not griping at Sarah, that I'm not sitting on the couch just watching ESPN, but I'm interacting with the kids. I'm helping out with the dishes, that kind of stuff. So,
yeah, no, that's huge.
All right. Already mentioned work-life balance as a big piece of advice you would like to give to up-and-coming athletic trainers. Is there anything else?
I think I would go back to, work-life balance, and just, I think more important, just understand their value and their worth. So no matter what field they go into, if we can get these high schoolers and college grads to understand their value and their worth and pursuing, you know, what they're called to do, life is just way more rewarding. Like, it's just way more rewarding. And I think it took me a few years to realize, like, my own value and worth, you know, even in the profession. And it's great once you realize that. You realize that you're giving a service to people that need it, and they're giving back to you in turn, and what you're doing is valuable. And so just remember that.
Yeah, on a similar note there, like with the podcast here, you know, I was doing it kind of, I don't know, just because it was something to do. And then people started saying, hey, I enjoy listening to it, or, hey, you know, have you thought about talking about this? And so once I began getting that feedback, I understood the value of it, because before it wasn't as big of a deal. It wasn't valuable to other people, so it wasn't really as valuable to me. And so if you are, if there's somebody that is valuable to you or something, then I would say, I always encourage people to leave a comment on their blog or tweet them and say, hey, I just appreciate what you do. They may never get back to you. You know, maybe it's some famous musician, or, you know, like J.J. Watt. I think he's a phenomenal character.
Right.
And so if I was to just send him a tweet, say, hey, dude, I just really like hearing about all the positive things you do for the community and your character. Thank you. And he never responds, but maybe he sees it again.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. So
that's a huge point. You're absolutely right. So making sure we're encouraging people in their value to us. Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, it was funny. I was literally on vacation when I stumbled upon your podcast, because I love podcasts. And I was like, finally something I can kind of listen to that's going to help, you know, just even in my profession, which I had not done. I listened to several other podcasts. So I love it. It's great.
So what other ones do you normally listen to?
Oh, I listen to Mom Struggling Well. I listen to Matt Chandler out of the Village Church in Texas. I listen to his Sunday sermons, and a couple other Texans, Jamie Ivey. So a lot of Christian women podcasts I listen to. But, you know, it was fun to find something that actually, like, I could listen to and feel like I was improving my skills for my actual career and job, which was good. So
very cool.
It was a good stumble.
Very good. Well, I'm glad you did. While you were chilling on the beach, right, in Florida?
Yeah. I'd like to be back there.
Yeah, I like listening to Family Life Today. Again, it's about family. It's Dennis Rainey and Bob Lapine, Dave Ramsey. And then there's a couple other ones I listen to. You know, I listen to two or three about, like, learning how to podcast or how to doing the podcast better. So obviously those are only for people who are interested in doing podcasting. But
yeah, I did a podcast for a while, nothing to do with athletic training. I ran the children's ministry at our church. And so the youth pastor and I came up with a weekly podcast to, like, bring home the lesson that parents and kids could listen to. For a short stint, it was like a year, but it was fun to podcast. And yeah, figuring out how to edit and, you know, do all the different things to the podcast was cool. So
is that still online somewhere?
It is. They're old now, but they're still available.
You have to send me a link so I can put it in here so everybody can check it out when they hear your story.
Oh, good grief. Yes, I will. So yeah, it was fun. But podcasting, I mean, it's really a way to get valuable information on the go. Like, you don't have to sit. You can be running, working out, in the grocery store, in your car, wherever you are.
Mm-hmm.
Good. It's perfect.
Yep. I really enjoyed it. So, it's, you get to pick. If you don't like listening to me, then don't listen to me. Pick somebody else. Listen to something different. I don't care.
No. Yeah, you do a great job.
Well, thank you. All right. obviously, I know your family is important. We've kind of discussed that. But who are three mm-hmm. people that you would really like to say thank you to and why?
Yeah, so my current boss at Groves High School, his name is Tom Flynn. He's the athletic director, but he happened to be the athletic trainer before, long before I got there. And so I appreciate the fact to work for a guy who knows the field well and understands what we do. And so that makes my, you know, our working relationship great. And he also understands family first. And so I really, really appreciate that. My friend Anna, who is also an athletic trainer in the area, she has been a kind of a rock that we can kind of gripe if we need to, get advice if we need to. She's also kind of an ACL rehab expert, so she's a great, you know, great resource for me. But I just enjoy having another person in the field that I can kind of talk through, you know, things with. I think that's the one downfall of working direct with a high school is I don't have a group of athletic trainers with me, you know, so I kind of have to seek that out. So I really appreciate Anna. And finally, you know, my husband, I could not literally, I know I said family's important, but he got to athletic training. He respects my job and what I do and supports me. And so that's like invaluable, 100%.
Great. Tell me a little bit more about, you said Tom Flynn was the athletic trainer and now he's the head football coach?
No, he's the athletic director.
Oh, athletic director.
Yeah. So he was the athletic trainer, teacher trainer at Groves for, you know, a long time. And then he took over as the athletic director. And they had a couple trainers before they hired me. But, you know, you hear a lot about administration maybe not understanding what you do or having to kind of teach them what you do. And I was able to kind of come in here and he's well aware of what I do and is able to communicate that to the, you know, central office and the administrators, et cetera. And so that's a huge blessing. Huge.
Wow. Very good. Have you, do y'all, you have just one at your high school, right? You're it?
Yeah.
And has he been working towards possibly another one or?
No, we're currently just trying to figure out how to structure, you know, my contract. It would be great. I don't think that they would ever, maybe a part-time, but at this point that's not even, you know, kind of in the works. So there's things, you know, that just don't get covered. So we do a lot of prioritize. Obviously, all home events I'm there for, unless I'm off that particular day. And so there's a lot of running to events or placing a student trainer at an indoor event to call me, you know, if I'm needed, et cetera. But there's some days that things just don't get covered. And so, you know, it happens and I've just had to be okay with it. You know, that's kind of their choice. This is what I'm here for. And so far it's worked out okay. There haven't been any catastrophes that I haven't been around for, which is great. But in a perfect environment, we would have a second, you know, part-time. We're just not there.
All right. So obviously we talked about work-life balance, family being important. Covering all home events is very difficult. I was by myself at what is now a 6A high school here in Texas, which is the biggest category. So we have 2,500 kids when I was working there in Fort Bend. And there was plenty of times where events weren't covered or I had to go work at the stadium and then the home basketball game or soccer game was not being covered. So talk a little bit about how specifically in that situation, you're the only athletic trainer at the school. How do you maintain that balance? How do you prioritize?
Yeah, I mean, I usually just take a look at the sport and the amount of injuries I would see in that sport. So football, lacrosse, soccer, you know, winter's kind of easy because everything's indoors. But I plant myself at those where, you know, I deem probably the most significant injury is possible. And then I obviously just have my cell phone. And so if there is something going on indoors, like volleyball, then whoever's taking tickets or the coach or whoever has my, you know, cell and will just call me and I'll, you know, go in. I think the biggest way I combat any issues with that is we, John Seiko, who you've had on the podcast, he brought in an educational piece where we do concussion and drug and alcohol education with all of our teams before the season starts. And so I've just included in that piece as I introduce myself to parents, like I say, there's one of me and there's a lot of you. And so if I'm not at your event, it's not because I don't value your event or your athlete. It's just, there's just one of me. And so I will get there and you're free to call me, you know, kind of a thing. But I think, you know, for the most part, collision contact sports kind of went out because they're the ones I find the most, you know, significant injuries in. And that's usually where I'm at.
All right. Yeah, I mean, you just have to look at the priority, and then, like you said, you communicate, your administration understands, communicate with the parents beforehand, so, and then you set that priority in the beginning, so.
Yeah.
All right. Any other cool athletic trainer stories, injuries, that maybe like a big life-changing moment besides, you know, failing the test, but.
Yeah, that was a good lesson just in and of itself. You know, I can't think of anything. I've had, thankfully, you know, no life-threatening injuries in my 21 years, which I'm super grateful for. And if I go my entire career without encountering that, that'd be awesome. I'd be totally happy. I truly like what I do, which is great.
Very good. You know, it's that time of the year, people are switching jobs, people are looking for burnout solutions, or the grass is always greener. What is something that you might tell somebody who is feeling like, I don't know if I can do another year here?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I would spend a lot of time, like, just literally, I do a lot of journaling, writing, et cetera, kind of, and I've definitely experienced that at my job. I mean, I recently had kind of a contract issue, and it took a while to kind of get through that. And so it was just a reminder of, you know, and for me personally, it's a reminder of, I still wipe all of the like salary issues or whatever away. I still thoroughly enjoy going to work every day. And so, you know, my high schoolers will ask me all the time, like, how much do you make? And can I support a family on this? And all of that is true. You can do all of those things. I'm married to a public school teacher, and I'm an athletic trainer, and you can do it. It takes some work and some effort, but you can do it. But I would say, listen, if you're doing what you love, you know, remind yourself of why you're doing it and why you love it. And that may get you through that other year. It's not saying it's never time to shift. And I think, you know, as I emailed that one listener or tweeted with her, et cetera, it was like, you got to have your own boundaries well-defined. So what are they? And make sure you know that. And then if, you know, work starts infringing on that, then it might be time to switch. But money definitely doesn't buy happiness, ever, really. And so you just need to evaluate what you're doing, why you're doing it. Do you love it? I thoroughly get so much reward out of working with this high school population and seeing the infinite possibilities like that are open to them and the great things they're doing. And just the occasional time that they come back and give me a glimpse into their life is like worth going to work for me. So, I mean, everybody's different, you know, for sure. You got to evaluate what your goals are, what your boundaries are. You got to check that if you're married with your spouse, because you guys got to be on the same page. But if it's just, I feel like maybe I'm working, you know, I want to make more money, et cetera, really evaluate that and figure out, is that really what's going on?
Very cool. Kelly, well, I appreciate you joining me here, being part of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. Yep. I look forward to hearing your own podcast there. I know you said it's a little old, but I look forward to hearing that and sharing that with everybody just for fun. So
it's utter silliness, but it was fun.
All right, Kelly, well, enjoy the rest of your day. And again, thank you for being part of the Sports Medicine Broadcast. All right, Kelly.
Take care.
Bye.